This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a 50-yard attempt trying to extend the lead for Pittsburgh. Boswell. He's got it. Steelers trying to add to their lead. Made a 59-yarder in warm-ups. Boswell drives it. And he connects. Chris Boswell. Automatic. Second and 15. Harris back in. Wilson, it's a moonshot, and it's caught by Pickens! Over the head of Brandon Stevens. First down, Steelers. Jackson, deep drop, timing route, drops it in the bucket, caught by Hill! Steelers fighting for the football, they come away with it! Play is whistled dead, the question, who's got it? Two-point try. Ravens down by two. Hill in the backfield. Jackson keeping it. Jackson fake. Jackson tosses. Incomplete. The pressure was there. Joey Porter Jr. flocking to the quarterback. Pittsburgh maintains the lead. 106 to go. Classic AFC North battle belongs to Pittsburgh again. Steelers win it over the Ravens. 18-16. They've got first place in the AFC North.
Yes, I'm still reeling from the Cabali take. Yes, I am. I have to admit that. Driving in today, I heard Dr. Marcus Welby, Steelers apologist Mark Cabali, saying that this team is more complete than the 05, 08, or 2010 Steelers? Limits? Did I hear that correctly?
That would be correct.
We're going to get back to that because this is a morning here to celebrate. To celebrate a defense that restaked its claim. And I will say that I think after the first three games, I was saying this had the best chance to equal 2010 than any Steeler defense since then. Then I thought they waned for a little while, but yesterday was a command performance. And to me, there's two stories coming out of this game. Two stories of the game, I'll say. I mean, obviously, first place. Suddenly you might be peering toward that number one seed. Are we looking at a game much bigger than we thought on Christmas Day against the Chiefs? The Bills will have something to say about that for sure. But the stories of the game for me are these, two of them. Mike Tomlin against Lamar Jackson. I thought and said on Friday that it was too small a sample size to come to any great conclusions about the Steelers being in Lamar's head, about Mike Tomlin having the design that everybody else in the NFL should be looking at when it comes to Lamar. But I also said, man, if this happens again, like I thought Lamar was going to come in and do some work in this game. But I said, if it happens again, then I think we all have to acknowledge that the Steelers just dominate Lamar Jackson. I mean, did you see him? He was a shell of himself. He's muttering to himself on the sidelines. They line up for a two-point conversion. Nobody knows what they're doing. It seemed to be a broken play. Charles Davis said it on CBS. Said, I think there was supposed to be a receiver in that play. No? Otherwise, Lamar would have sprinted to the corner immediately. And if he did, it would have been just him and Joey Porter. I mean, it kind of wound up being that way anyway, except there was a whole posse involved at that point, if you watch the play again. That didn't seem like just a design run, or else he goes. Like, before they called timeout, before that, it was a design run and maybe a jump pass to the right, and it looked to be decisive. This was not decisive. You had Ravens arguing before the play, and you just had a ridiculous play by Lamar. And man, he makes a lot of those against the Steelers. And now he's 1-4. And now the new version of Lamar has looked horrendous against the Steelers. The Todd Monken new creation of Lamar, where he's got more time to decipher things at the line of scrimmage. He's got more ownership in the offense. Having one of the greatest seasons of all time, inarguably, was on pace for the highest passer rating of all time. 24 touchdowns, 2 picks, was going to run for 1,000, still might. Who knows? And he comes in here and that happens? That? They looked horrendous. He's overthrowing guys by 10 miles. He can't get outside the pocket, which is where he loves to be. And when he does, nothing really happens. He's flustered. He's missing open receivers. I went back and watched the game today. There were so many plays, one in particular came to mind, where he tried to force a ball downfield and overthrew one of his tight ends by like 20 yards. And he had Derrick Henry. Remember him, Ravens? Remember that guy that you have on your team? For an easy little outlet where he gets a first down and maybe a whole lot more. So story number one from this game is Mike Tomlin against Lamar Jackson. And the schemes and the rules, the Jackson rules, I know Charles Davis also mentioned the Jordan rules. It really does remind me of that. It does. The bad boy Detroit Pistons, what they did to Michael Jordan. And if you've ever seen, I think there's a documentary just on that. There's a book practically just on that. The Jordan rules. The number one rule was don't let that dude leave his feet when he gets anywhere near the basket, because that's when he makes plays. Don't let him leave his feet. The number one rule for Lamar, as far as I can see and as far as Tomlin talks about it, is don't let him get outside the pocket and make plays. He got out there just a couple times and maybe made one play. And I heard Tomlin talking on the pregame show to Bob Labriola, and it was fascinating. Fascinating to hear him break down basically the Jackson rules and what they are. And the number one rule is, like with Jordan, don't let him leave his feet. It's with Lamar, don't let him leave the pocket. And Tomlin pointed out in that interview, this guy has 9 touchdowns outside the pocket. That's number one in the NFL. Over 400 yards passing outside the pocket. 123 passer rating. He's Michael Jordan against everybody else. He's like, I don't know, Frank Brakowski against the Steelers, and you don't even know who Frank Brakowski is, limits. He's just another guy. He's Brady Quinn. He's pick a guy. I don't care. Pick somebody. He's Dorian Thompson Robinson. Was that his name? The guy that beat them last year? That's who he is.
Cody Kessler.
He's Cody Kessler against the Steelers. He stinks against the Steelers. And Mike Tomlin deserves immense credit for that. Because now we have 5 games, including one with this version of Lamar, where he looked horrible. Give Mike Tomlin all the credit in the world. He also told Labriola, there's a lot of mobile quarterbacks, all of them a little bit different. There's a prescribed recipe in terms of dealing with each one. And the pocket component of his, obviously, is really, really significant. So you go back. If you tape the game, go back and watch what they did. And it's every person. Here's the other thing about the Jordan rules or the Jackson rules is that every single person has a role to play. And you'll notice a little bit less manic aggressiveness from the outside guys, where they're keeping him more contained. You'll notice at times they go with a four-man rush. Then you'll notice in the second half, they unleash all kinds of things. There's a Landon Roberts on a delayed blitz getting a free shot at Jackson. There's Deshaun Elliott and Patrick Queen on a blitz together. It's a bunch of different things that they do. The inside guys, unbelievable discipline on the inside. Where it seems to me, unless you get a major push, your job is just to contain and not let him run up the middle. Dean Lowry had a great game. What a game by him. They're deflecting passes. They're making this guy see ghosts. I think that's above all what I would say is that Tomlin is making Lamar Jackson see ghosts, and he always has. Now, I know he's 1-4 against Kansas City, but remember the game earlier this year in KC? Jackson was great, I thought, and just a foot out of bounds keeps that from being, I think, a Ravens win at that point. He plays terrible against this team. He's Cody Kessler. That was a very good pick. He's Mitch Trubisky. That's who he is. He turns into Mitch Trubisky against the Steelers. So that's story number one, all of that. And give Mike Tomlin a ton of credit, man, because that's Michael Jordan, at least regular season Jordan. The guy's unbelievable, and he looks horrendous. And that the credit goes to Tomlin above all and by far. Story number two, and I know it's not really the sexy one here, but Chris Boswell is ridiculous. Not many guys in league history have kicked 6 field goals in a game, period. Not to mention 6 field goals in a game with 3 of them beyond 50. He's done it twice this year. They've won 2 games without scoring a touchdown. Limits, if I had told you on Friday, along with Donnie Football, on another Donnie Football Friday, that the Steelers were not going to score a touchdown in this game, what percent chance would you have given them to win?
25.
Yeah, I would have been around there, probably lower.
Mike, if somebody had said to you before the game you'd beat the Ravens without scoring a touchdown, what would your reaction have been?
Steelers-Ravens.
Pony didn't get a lot of feedback. Where did he come from? He just pops in there like Waldo?
He was asking all kinds of questions.
It was incredible. How many questions? 3?
He asked 3. He probably had a total of 7 words as a response.
Now, Pony could jump up in the hierarchy, in the rankings, the top 25 of most hated Tomlin media people, and he could do that in a hurry. I mean, he could rise past Tim Benz in a second. Aditi Kinkabwala, he could rise past her. The all-timer, Jory Rand, David Todd. Pony goes around there 3 or 4 times. He's making up for lost time in a hurry.
Do you think Tomlin was fully aware of Pony being there?
He knows who Pony is.
He knows who Pony is.
And he knows Pony hasn't been there at all, and now he shows up, and that's what you got. But credit to Pony, by the way, for popping in there. I loved it. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it goes Jury Rand 1, David Todd 2, maybe Aditi number 3 of all timers. Benz has dropped in the rankings. I don't sense that irritation with Tomlin and Benz. But make no mistake, Pony could make up for lost ground in a hurry. Boswell. Like every single Steelers-Ravens game comes down to a field goal, and he has surpassed Justin Tucker, who's to say he's struggling would be kind. He stinks. That's just the difference in the game. I don't know what else to say about that. Like I said, it's not a real sexy story here. But when you have a guy cranking 3 field goals from beyond 50 and going 6 for 6, and the other guy, who people have rightfully at times wondered if he's the best kicker in the history of the league, can't even get a 47-yarder right, and that should be a gimme these days. That's kind of the story of the game. I mean, there's a million things we're going to talk about, but the Steelers have maybe the ultimate weapon. The kid in Dallas, I know, is very good. There's a couple of others. They may have the ultimate weapon. This may sound ridiculous, but is it time to start talking about Chris Boswell as the greatest regular season kicker of all time? Limits?
I think we're maybe getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Are we, though?
But I think he's top 5.
Well, if we're top 5, then we're not getting ahead of ourselves. Then he's definitely in the conversation. Who's the greatest? Something happened yesterday, and the savvy old news hound knew it before anyone else. I wondered, is Tucker still first all-time in field goal percentage in the NFL? I looked on profootballreference.com, a miracle of a website, I might add, for anything you want to know, including you can look up every final score of every game ever played within seconds. Sure enough, there was Justin Tucker at 89.8%. This was in the fourth quarter. So I wondered, him going 1-for-3 here and Boz going 6-for-6, how close are they? And is Tucker still number one? And guess what, Limits? Justin Tucker lost his lead. He's no longer the number one most accurate kicker of all time. He fell into second place yesterday.
Behind Adam Vinatieri.
No, you're wrong. Adam Vinatieri's not even close. Do you know who's number one all time? Wrong. Eddie Pinero. You know where his favorite place to eat sandwiches was?
Panera Bread.
Yes, it was. I don't even know who he played for. I think he still plays. Who is he? Is he Carolina? No wonder. He's Carolina's kicker. Nobody knows who he is.
He was in Chicago for a while.
That doesn't count. He's been here for 10 minutes. So, but I guess he has enough kicks. So he's one. Tucker, Harrison Butker, Daniel Carlson, and Chris Boswell.
Top five.
Is the fifth most accurate kicker of all time. And he's now just about within a percentage point of Tucker. He has a very real chance, if he keeps doing this, to be the most accurate kicker who has ever lived. Our little Boz. Aren't you proud?
Very proud. I mean, he has been, and I've said it a lot this year, just a complete weapon for them. He was their MVP of the game yesterday. Again.
Yeah,
twice.
You can't argue it. Those are points, literal points on the board. And in this rivalry, and I should have known better. What was your final score?
24-22, so I had the margin right, but the points a little bit higher than it ended up being.
Well, but you were better than me. I thought it was to be one of the rare shootouts. I saw a Steeler offense that seemed to be rising. I saw this Raven offense. But it came down to kicking again. Again, we're talking about kicking.
You had a Steelers loss, though.
I know. And I'm not ashamed of that because obviously it was a bounce of the ball either way.
Yeah.
And it's going to be that way in a lot of Steeler games. But that's why having Boswell is such a major advantage here. So those two things, in my mind, the stories of the game is Tomlin just destroying Lamar again. We're talking about this again. Can I hear Brian Kelly again? Did he lose the other night? But in a good way.
Yeah, and he was going off on some Florida player or something. I don't know. He got into a lot of trouble again.
I really dislike him immensely, and I'm glad to see him losing. And the kicker. Tomlin and the kicker. Then there's a bigger picture, of course. And there's many other things within the game that we'll talk about. And the bigger picture is now you control your fate in the AFC North because you're two games up in the loss column on the Ravens. And now, you may not think it's realistic. Maybe it's not. But now, just by virtue of the fact that you're only one game behind them, you can set your sights on the number one seed. You got to come back on a quick turnaround and beat the fighting Jameis Winstons. And then you're sitting there at 9-2 with a nice long break, getting ready for the Bengals with a real chance because they just don't know how to win anymore. A real chance to go 10-2. Now, those will both be tough games. They're both in the division. So from my vantage point here, I don't think it's necessarily going to happen, but it's certainly realistic. It has to be. The way that they're playing and the fact that they only have one more loss, they can set their sights on the number one seed in the AFC.
They currently control their own destiny in the AFC because they play Kansas City. The Baltimore game against Buffalo, somebody tweeted at me last night, is what gives the Steelers the edge right now. So if they win out, which would obviously be very, very difficult to do, they would be the number one seed. Or if a couple of things bounce their way, so the numbers are working their way right now.
They'll have the tiebreaker on the Bills no matter what?
I think some things still have to factor out, but I mean, Pony and a couple others reported it last night too, that right now they control their destiny no matter what.
Okay. All right. Because they have two losses, so do the Bills. Maybe that comes down to AFC record, common opponents. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to look at that. Bottom line is, it's realistic at this point. So this was a great day for the Steelers. Yeah, we're going to talk about the offense, troubles in the red zone. Should they use Justin Fields more there? All that stuff. But man, any victory over the Ravens is a great one. On the other hand, I will say there is one on the other hand. If owning the Ravens meant something in the bigger picture a lot, then we wouldn't be looking at seven straight years without a playoff win, correct? They've owned the Ravens. That hasn't translated to a whole lot, but that doesn't mean you don't feel great about still owning them and still making Lamar look like that.
Well, Steve Bisciotti might be the owner of the Ravens, but if you go to Wikipedia, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody changed it to Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Wasn't this a predictable game, though, Joe? I mean, Lamar has not been good against them. They've taken his lunch money. This is the best I felt about a game going into it, other than the Raiders game, because that felt like a cupcake. Like, people were asking when I was walking into the game, I was talking to a bunch of people, how do you feel? Confident, relaxed. The Steelers just dominate Baltimore, and there's nothing that the Ravens have been able to prove.
They dominate them in the overall record.
Correct.
But, I mean, it wasn't like the game was a cakewalk.
No, but
it came down to a two-point conversion at the end to tie it.
In the waning moments, I had no doubt that they were going to stop Baltimore on that two-point play. No doubt.
No doubt.
No, because I've seen it time and time again. Remember when they went for it and Lamar overthrew Mark Andrews?
I do.
What type of play was that on the two-point conversion?
A horrible play.
Horrible.
Yeah.
I had no doubt they were going to win that game.
Okay. No doubt is very strong, but if you felt that inside, then I can't blame you. I had doubt for sure when Flowers caught that ball and then you have a two-point conversion. And the fact that the Steelers didn't convert any of their four red zone tries did leave them a little bit vulnerable. But you're right. History says there's a number out there, limits. Since this streak started, I think it was November 1st, 2020. Since then, the Steelers have beaten the Ravens 8 of 9. And they've outscored the Ravens in the second half and overtime 91-41. To me, that speaks of coaching.
Significantly, yeah.
Like, what is John Harbaugh doing, honestly, against the Steelers? I mean, I think we also have to keep the perspective that the Ravens have won divisions here. They've won playoff games lately, which the Steelers have not done. So the Steelers owning the Ravens and, to some degree, owning the AFC North, at least in terms of record within the division, hasn't really amounted to much because of what happens outside the division. It hasn't amounted to anything, actually.
And you know the one quarterback that lost a game for the Steelers to the Baltimore Ravens during that streak? One, Mitch Trubisky, who came in after Kenny Pickett was hurt after only, what, like five plays?
Yeah. Now, Harbaugh, yesterday, again, there's 38 seconds left in the first half, okay? I realize the Steelers have three timeouts. So they can call all three, get a three and out, maybe still get a field goal anyway, right? But there's no Derrick Henry on the field? Deep in your own territory? Later on, with the two-point conversion we speak of, no Derrick Henry on the field? Not to mention no Flowers. So you take, other than Lamar, you take your two best offensive weapons off the field on the biggest play of the year? What are you doing? How could Derrick Henry not be in on a snap from the two-yard line with a chance to tie a game? You don't have to give it to him, but the Steelers would certainly have to account for him. So Harbaugh let that happen, and that was after a timeout, by the way. So that was their best thinking, got them to a crap play with no Derrick Henry or Flowers on the field. Unbelievable. So no Henry on the field late in the first quarter. You get the turnover. They were fooled by Justin Fields. How many times yesterday? Two or three times? What did they think? He came in to pass the ball?
And that was brilliant from the Steelers, finally using Justin Fields in a package.
Horrible, horrible defense by the Ravens there. What else happened yesterday? They're the most penalized team in the NFL, which is not, reflecting very kindly on him.
I still can't get over the ball bouncing off Zay Flowers' shoulder pad after Lamar did such a good job to get away from pressure.
Yeah, he finally made a good play, and it bounces off that guy. And I'm not so sure. I mean, this speaks to how great Lamar has actually been. I'm not so sure that his weapons are as great as people think on the outside. Flowers is a good player. After that, how about Deontay? Deontay has two plays early in the game, and they both were weird. How many Deontay plays are just, you could describe as weird with Pickett? There's a million of them. I go back to that Dolphins comeback game. Was it Deontay's fault or Pickett's fault? There was the other one. I forget which game it was last year. We're constantly asking, was that Deontay's fault or the quarterback's fault? Here's a news flash for you. It was Deontay's fault. And it happened again yesterday. Jackson actually does break outside the pocket, which is where they don't want him to be. He sees Deontay down the right sideline, and something goes amiss. Was it an overthrow? Was it Deontay not reading his quarterback right and breaking for the ball? Like moving, when I say breaking for the ball, going down the field. Something was off, okay? Then the second and last time I saw Deontay in that game was the fade down the left sideline in the first quarter, I believe. And Charles Davis on CBS said, you got to help your quarterback there. He left no room to the sideline to actually make it a fade type of catch. He was running right along the sideline, and therefore the ball was out of bounds.
Red line, Deontay, red line.
So there again, Deontay. He's had like six plays of any significance with that team, and he blanked up on five of them. He's just horrible.
The funny thing to me about it is, you know, the first drive, those plays are all scripted plays. So they clearly wanted to get Deontay involved against his former team early and often,
yeah,
like the Steelers
did.
With Patrick Queen
exactly.
Going out for the coin toss.
Yes.
After those two plays, well, now, Deontay, sit down. Well, we don't need you. It didn't work out.
You're right about that, I think. Because if he was a significant part of the game plan yesterday, like we're going to feature this guy, then those two, it wasn't like he dropped a touchdown pass.
No.
Then he would have stayed in and had some more targets. I agree with you, Limits, that they wanted that little emotional shot. They wanted to give a petty game ball to him. Of course, he would have dropped it or run the wrong way with it, right? Man, he stinks. You know that? I don't know what happened to him. He thinks he's a lot better than he is. I'm sure he put something out on social media saying it's everybody else's fault. Nobody knows the real story of why I only appeared for two significant plays yesterday. Unbelievable, that guy. Your calls at 412-928-9370. 412-928-9370. Stories of the game from my perspective. Bob is not in today, and I know you're all missing him, and I'm sad about that. I believe he'll be in tomorrow because he has obligations with the Tomlin News Conference that we're going to carry live here at noon, I might add. Brian Bacco going to join me. Off the Top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. So yes, from my perspective, the two biggest stories within the game, why they won, is Mike Tomlin's brilliance, his dominance of perhaps the greatest weapon in the NFL. Really, if you take a 4 or 5 year span, the greatest regular season weapon in the NFL, you could certainly argue, is Lamar Jackson. And Tomlin's got him every time, including this version of Lamar. Just about every time. This version of Lamar. A 66 passer rating, completes less than half of his passes. Says the only team in the league where he's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. He's never rushed for a touchdown against the Steelers. That's story number one. And then the kicker. The kicker is just a kicking genius. He's better than Gus, the field goal kicking mule. Did you ever see that story, Limits?
No.
You should watch that movie sometime. Gus was a mule who could kick field goals. And believe me, he had a lot of range if you go back and watch the movie. I think Boz is better than him. He might be better than anybody. He's fifth. I actually thought by my calculations he moved into fourth place all time. But little Daniel Carlson can keep his spot for now. Chris Boswell has a very real chance because he's fifth right now. Just a couple spots behind Justin Tucker, who lost the number one spot. Chris Boswell has a very real chance to be the most accurate kicker who has ever walked this planet. How about that statement, Limits, and how realistic it is?
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but if this continues and he's the number one guy all time, does Chris Boswell go to the hallowed grounds?
He might.
I won't even say it. I don't want to jinx him.
I think Vinatieri might be regarded as the greatest kicker because of his playoff exploits. Like, you got to do something in the playoffs. Maybe that's ahead for old Mr. Boswell. Yeah, he might be the greatest regular season kicker of all time.
Remember the last time that the Steelers won a playoff game? Chris Boswell.
Cincinnati?
I'm thinking about the Kansas City game.
Ah, yes. That game, they didn't score a touchdown either.
Nope. They find a way to win because Chris Boswell is just so dang good at kicking field
is
goals.
Is Chris Boswell the team MVP?
Right now, yes.
I actually think, I love, obviously, TJ, right, is great. Russell Wilson's injected life into the offense that it didn't have before. Cam has been unbelievable. I'm sorry, you win two games without scoring a touchdown because it's not like it's, if I would feel differently if he was 6 for 6 on 32 yarders. You know what I mean? He was 6 for 6 in Atlanta with 3 beyond 50, and he was 6 for 6 yesterday with 3 beyond 50. He's won them two games in which they didn't score a touchdown. He's the team MVP. Is he the league MVP over Lamar?
No, but you know who is.
I'm kidding.
You know
about
who
that.
Is.
Who?
Should we go back to my prediction that I made on Friday?
Little Josh Allen.
Yeah, you want to hear that one?
Yes, I do. Listen, look at this. Limits has all his predictions clipped. If I make a good prediction, do I come in Monday and it's clipped? No, but he sure as heck has his own. Let's
Josh
hear
Josh Allen cements himself as the guy that should be the favorite for the MVP in this game, and they beat the Kansas City Chiefs
over
with
Lamar?
No wide receivers. Yes.
That's
but
a
no
good prediction. That is
himself
as the favorite. Well, I
he
guess
puts
if Lamar
himself
has
ahead.
A bad game, you're right. All right.
Let's see how
ahead.
I might predict that one.
I threw that in. If Lamar has a bad game, you're right.
And he did.
And guess who's the MVP on ESPN's odds right now?
Joshua
Little
Allen.
Josh Allen.
Let's go.
Let's give a hand to Limits. Give a hand to yourself, Limits, for clipping your own clips from Friday, but never my good prediction.
I put that one out there on Twitter. That's why
I'm sure you
why
did.
I had it.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is very interesting to me. A couple different things. One, that Limits has never come in on a Monday with a right prediction by me or Donnie Football. But sure enough, he's got the clip of his Friday prediction of Josh Allen becoming the MVP frontrunner. That was absolutely incredible, Limits, and I actually commend you for it. If I ever get anything right, will you clip it?
Yes, you just sometimes might have to remind me of the specific one that you want because you do get a lot right, but I had to toot my own horn with Josh Allen because year after year I pick him to win MVP and he finally might be the front runner.
He may very well be. The second thing is if the Steelers lose this game, the phone lines are lit like Malzie in a craft beer house right now. But when I open with massive praise for Tomlin, it's tumbleweeds. I mean, there's a couple weighing in. Seth from Long Island, is he one?
Yes.
How about a day to give Mike Tomlin a ton of credit for doing what nobody else in the NFL can do? Steve Spagnuolo's had some credit, or had some success, I should say, with Lamar. Although Lamar, like, he played great, I thought, against Kansas City in the opener. This team makes Lamar, as I mentioned in the opening, look like Mitch Trubisky. Do you have the Trubisky train? We might as well play it in honor of Lamar. I mean, this is what they make him look like. He's just an ordinary guy, even below ordinary.
Woo-hoo!
It's the Trubisky train.
There was no doubt about it.
Lamar Trubisky is who they turn him into. So why don't we give him some credit? But there's tons of things to weigh in on here. There's also Chris Boswell, maybe on his way to becoming the greatest regular season kicker of all time. There's Steelers red zone issues that we should talk about. Why don't we touch on that briefly right now? A limitless wonder. The Steelers were 0 for 4 in the red zone. I think they took around 12 snaps. Four of them were throwaways by Russell. So, you know, you look at that, you say, well, you know, at least he didn't make a mistake. Whoops. The one he should have thrown away with a 15-10 lead was just an act of insanity. What is he doing? And why doesn't 6-7 Mount Washington make any move for the ball? But forget about that. He should have. There's no way you throw a 50-50 jump ball. And by the way, jump ball implies that both people jump. And good old Mount Washington. And he had a big catch after that, by the way.
Two.
And I'll say this about the offense. I will say this. They've scored points in 22 consecutive quarters, which leads the NFL. And they did just enough yesterday to keep the defense rested. Little plays, little conversions, not the least of which was Mount Washington on that nice catch from Russ on a third down play. That little bit of extra rest. They held the ball for 36 minutes. Keeps your defense fresh. It does. It keeps them from opening some pages in their playbook, things like that. So that's important. Having said that, obviously we don't score a touchdown against your main rival. That's not ideal. And in the red zone, I mean, they tried a bunch of different things. I went back and looked at every single snap. Quick out to Pickens, nothing. Fake pitch, throwaway. And then this was the first trip to the red zone. Then Dan Moore and Jones both get beat on a play, and he's got to throw it away again. Second one, you have a little scramble by Russ under pressure again. Second down, a quick throw to Freiermuth, which was a nice play. And then another throwaway, and then a false start by Seumalo, and then it blows up. Although he did give Pickens a 50-50 ball in the end zone, the right time to do it, I might add. Red zone trip number three of after the moon ball to Pickens puts you at the 14. Najee gets you four. Good, give it to him again. I like that. But Roquan Smith made a great play. Third down, just a useless pass to Van Jefferson. He dropped it anyway. It didn't matter. Just a terrible play. Then red zone number four, great Najee run, puts it on the six. You give it to Najee again. I did like that. That's what we all want, right? You're running the ball well. Run it in the red zone. Give it to Najee if he's doing well. I don't blame Artie Smith for that. But a big hit on Najee by the kid who came in and replaced Roquan. Second down, keep in mind the score is 15-10 right now, and you have Boswell on your team. Maybe somebody should have said that into Russ's ear. Don't forget we have Bos. Go up eight here. He puts up the jump ball. No, first there was a throwaway, and then he puts up the jump ball, which was just crazy. And by the way, the next time they got the ball, he put up a 50-50 ball for Pickens in the end zone, leading 15-10. I thought that was a horrible decision too. Like, what are you doing? Let's go up eight. Up eight. Let's go up eight. Boswell's on your team. That almost got picked by Tre'Davious White. So the red zone leaves a little bit to be desired here. And I saw a number today from The Athletic on red zone efficiency or lack thereof. Russell Wilson's been great. We all know that for the most part. That was like his first horrendous decision. But this is from The Athletic. He's only completed 7 of 24 passes in the red zone. That's 29%. He's had a ton of throwaways, which, again, is not always a bad play when you have Boswell. Fields, on the other hand, 13 of 19, 68% in the red zone, and gives you the running threat. So I ask you, oh, limitless wonder, would you use Fields a little bit more in the red zone? Because I would. I was on the Post-Gazette post-game yesterday for a little bit with Adam Bittner, and I wasn't aware of that particular stat. And I was wavering on that a little bit, saying Russell get it together in the red zone. And he might, you know, but those numbers stand out to me. And then you saw what Fields did on his couple of plays yesterday. I don't think it's a terrible idea. especially inside the 10, inside the 5, to have him on the field. Do you?
No, I would utilize him there. Especially, I mean, we know, we talked about it a lot, how good Russell Wilson's numbers were in the red zone in Denver. It's not translating here. As good as he is in the other portions of the field, this is why you have Justin Fields. And this is why they utilized him late in the game. I mean, they specifically had this package for him in these type of waney moments to get yards when the running game, I mean, we saw it on first down, they gained 1 yard with Najee. So the same thing I would apply with Fields in the red zone. How many rushing touchdowns did he have in the red zone this year? At least 3? So why not go back to the well? Use the weapon you have.
I agree. I'm at a point where I agree with that. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Listen to the Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Mike Tomlin coming up at noon. It's a Monday news conference this week, which is why Pomp isn't here with me. He'll be here tomorrow. And we'll get an injury report from Tomlin. Our injury report brought to you by Shenderovich, Shenderovich and Fishman. They've got your back, not your wallet. Here's another little treat on Russell Wilson. This was an NFL executive to Mike Sando from The Athletic, who's really good at what he does. He said of the Steelers, "I still think they have to run the ball a little better, but the match of an offensive coordinator and the quarterback are made in heaven. As long as Russell doesn't decide he has to start cooking all the time." There may have been a little bit of that over these past weeks. Davis mentioned it on the broadcast yesterday. We all saw it on the throw to Mount Washington. Got to put that under wraps just a little. This isn't 25-year-old Russell Wilson. You know what I mean? Just a little bit, and maybe sprinkle in some Fields, especially deep in the red zone. Other than that, of course, I'm fine with Russell Wilson. He's been wonderful. But there are little tweaks, and that guy, that NFL executive, might have hit on something. Whether it's taken too many shots down the field or that decision yesterday where you're running around all crazy and you throw up that ball, maybe just a little bit of a concern with too much cooking.
Yeah, that ball was in the end zone that I was sitting at, and it just seemed like that ball was in the air forever, and you knew it was not going to reach out of bounds. It was not going to get out of the end zone, even for Mount Washington to potentially make a play. One thing that crossed my mind was, are the sacks on Russell Wilson or were the sacks on the offensive line yesterday?
Well, a couple of them. He was under siege a fair amount of the time. One, Dan Moore just got blatantly beat. And then maybe one or two were on Russ, and some were them playing game. One was them playing a game inside where it's hard to tell who had the mistake.
Adafe Owe had 3 sacks in the first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's starting to pay dividends. And that's one other little take on the Ravens side from this game. Tomlin was right, and I don't think he was blowing smoke by saying this defense is better than their numbers, because they are. I don't know exactly what's happened there. Maybe an overmatched coordinator. We had Rob Long on from The Fan in Baltimore, thought their problem was scheme because it's largely the same players. They benched the one safety, Marcus Williams, yesterday. But come on. These are the Ravens. They're stout up front with a bunch of monsters. They have a star at each of the next two levels in Roquan. And Kyle Hamilton is a great player. So they're going to get it together. They did get it together defensively yesterday. They throttled Josh Allen earlier this season. He's pretty good last I checked. And they've had some major problems, which is why they brought Dean Pease in to be a consultant with their defense with a new coordinator. They are not as bad as their numbers.
No. And I mean, Zach Gore seems to be a little bit overwhelmed after Mike McDonald went to Seattle to be their head coach as the new defensive coordinator. But I mean, their secondary at times when we were told is not very good, made some plays. They did a pretty good job in coverage. I was surprised Mike Williams didn't get that much run in the game.
Yeah, I mean, they have good players. That's the thing. Wiggins looks like a good player to me. Their draft pick. We know Marlon Humphrey's good. We know Hamilton's good. We know Roquan's good. Owe seems to be coming along a little bit. Then they got those other guys. It seems like they've always had those guys up front. Here's the good news overall. You know what the best news is overall? Limits.
8-2. Wins.
8-2. Perhaps headed to 9-2, although I don't think that'll be easy. That you can put your sights on the number one seed, but almost bigger than that. Almost bigger than that for me. And I felt it coming out of the Washington game, and I said it, that this team can compete with anybody in the AFC. It's going to be a bunch of games down the stretch where it's going to be a kick, a bounce of the ball. I'm going to lose some. But that doesn't take away my belief, my feeling that they can compete with anybody. And if I'm a fan, that is a great feeling to have going down the stretch here, that your team is a legit contender. And it's a feeling I haven't had since probably midway through the 2020 season, the 11-0 start, maybe a little later than that. But it became clear at some point, wow, they really aren't a contender. The wheels are falling off here. It's been a while. It's been a while since I felt the Steelers had a real chance in the AFC. So think about how great it is to have all these games coming up. I know this is a case where I really rather would play Carolina seven times down the stretch. I really rather would do that. But think of all the talk, all the excitement, analysis, all the parties you're going to plan for games at Cincy against the Fighting Joe Burrows, at Philly for the state championship, rematch at Baltimore on December 21st, and four days later, the Chiefs come to town. This is Mardi Gras, man. This is football Mardi Gras. This is where you want to be. Not just in it, you know? In it's nice. Everybody's in it. Who's out of it? I don't care about in it. And especially in it when you have no chance to win and everybody knows it. That's not the place to be in pro sports. This year, they're in it, which means they've got a shot. They can beat anybody. I'm not predicting anything, but they can beat anybody. I think that's pretty clear.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.